And so this morning, as you might imagine, being small group Sunday, what we're going to talk about is the gospel and community. And, you know, the nice thing about GCCC is that I actually don't have to convince you that community is important. That's actually not as normal as you might think. A lot of churches really struggle to have people kind of buy into vision of community or even buy into the idea of small groups. But for us here at GCCC, really, from the beginning, the idea of community, the importance of it, the value of it has really been kind of woven into the fabric of who we are as a church from the get-go. And even the idea of small groups is something that just, it's been a value all the way through. And so it's such a blessing to not have to like stand up here and actually like convince you that community is important or why community is important. You already get that for the most part. And maybe if you're new with us this morning or you're visiting or something, you know, maybe you would kind of need to catch a little bit more of that vision. But a lot of us, like, this is something that is kind of a part of our DNA already, which is such a huge blessing. And, you know, I came here 2 years ago, and even at that point, the small group ministry was in a lot of ways, you know, thriving. It was very strong. And so, you know, that's a huge blessing for someone coming in to lead that. And so instead of, you know, trying to convince you this morning that community is important or why community is important, what I feel like is important for us is to be reminded, we need to be reminded every once in a while what this type of community looks like that we're going after. We know it's important, but what does it look like? And sometimes we do need to be reminded and encouraged about that. And so this morning, we're going to look at how the gospel shapes community, a few kind of descriptors, a few markers of this type of community that we're going after here at GCCC. And so we're going to look at three different things. Three different things. We're going to look at that the gospel kind of impacts or shapes or forms community to be Christocentric. And you could probably guess really what that means. It just means Christ-centered. I just used that word because the other two are holistic and authentic. So I had to keep with the ick. So Christocentric, holistic, and authentic. That's how the gospel kind of shapes the community that we're looking at. That's the type of community. What does it look like? Well, it looks like it's Christocentric, all right? And as we think about how the gospel shapes our community to make it Christocentric or Christ-centered or having Christ as the center, I think that probably makes sense to us, right? We're at a church. We're at a Christian church. And so I think we all understand that as part of a Christian church, everything that we do, including community, will be Christocentric. We'll have Christ at the center. But sometimes what we miss when we think about the gospel is that we think about the gospel in terms of kind of a set of doctrinal beliefs. And so we think about the gospel and how that shapes things, and we think about just kind of the beliefs that we have, the things that we adhere to as a church. And what I want to remind us about this morning is that the gospel is not only kind of a set of doctrinal beliefs that we adhere to, that we believe, that we buy into. The gospel is actually, more than that, the gospel is actually Jesus himself. The gospel is a person. The gospel is the whole teaching and revelation of Jesus. The gospel is the whole life of Jesus. The gospel is Jesus. It's all about him. And so our church, our community should be all about him, should be all about being like him. Jesus, in the beginning of his ministry, one of the first things he did, or actually really the first thing that he did in the beginning of his ministry, was he formed a community whose desire was to be like him. He formed community in the beginning. The gospel shapes community because the gospel forms community. And this is seen in several different ways. It kind of echoes back to several different things too. It echoes back to creation, first of all. Again, I don't need to convince you that community is important, But we also do need to remember where community comes from, right? In Genesis chapter 1, God creates the world, creates everything. God then creates mankind. And God says in Genesis 1, let us make man in our image. God exists himself in community. And so as he makes man in his image, which necessarily means that he makes man in community, makes man for community. In fact, Genesis 1 just kind of gives us a general statement of making man in God's image. Genesis 2 gives us a little bit more detail about that. In Genesis 2, it kind of tells us how that happened. And in Genesis 2, remember creation, like all the things that God made, he said that it was good, right? In Genesis 2, he actually says something is not good. Something's not good. What is it? It's not good for man to be alone. God recognized, as God existed in community, as he created man first, he said, wait a minute. This is not good. This is not good. Man should not be alone. And so he created woman for, he created community. And this is something that is not good. This is before sin entered the world, right? There's a lot of things that aren't good after sin enters the world. But this is before sin enters the world, which is very interesting. God says something isn't good. Enough to say, I need to create something else to make this right, to make this good. So God creates community. So the gospel shapes community because the gospel forms community. It echoes back to, originally, the creation. We also see this idea of the gospel shaping and forming community in the commandments. Not only kind of the original Ten Commandments, which are actually all about how to be in community with God, what that looks like, and how to be in community with others, how to treat God, how to worship God, and how to treat others, what God says about that. But it also, kind of as those commandments are summed up in the life and the teaching of Jesus, you know, people would come up to Jesus and say, all right, Jesus, like trying to test him, what's the greatest commandment? He says, well, the greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. He echoes back to kind of their understanding of the Shema, it's called, loving God with all your heart. And he says, and the second one is like it, though. The second one is love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. Right? So the gospel forming community is seen right there in the commandments. Jesus says, you need to be in community with God first and foremost, and you need to be in community with others. You need to be in community with your neighbor. We see it in creation. We see it in the commandments. We also recognize that for Jesus, in his life, in his teaching, as he embodied this whole thing, people were drawn to him, right? I mean, he had crowds following him all the time. And so Jesus had to kind of set some ground rules almost. And so for Jesus, as Jesus forms community, he says, look, this type of community that I'm forming is a covenant community. Covenant meaning that it's a serious commitment. This is not something that you enter into lightly. So in Luke chapter 9, I think this is going to be up on the screen. In Luke chapter 9, Jesus, we see this story. As they were going along the road, someone said to him, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus said to him, look, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. To another he said, follow me. Jesus says, follow me. But he said, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, leave the dead to bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God. And another said, I will follow you, Lord, but first let me say farewell to those at my home. And Jesus said to him, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. These are like pretty harsh words as we look at them, if we kind of think about our understanding of what's going on here. Jesus says, listen, this is a serious commitment. This is a covenant that you're entering into. He says, look, this is not going to be something that's comfortable. This is covenant, not consumerism. This is not something where you enter into it only if you feel like it's going to meet your needs. Only if it's going to be convenient for you. only, you know, when you want to. It's not consumerism. This is covenant. This is commitment. It's not going to be comfortable. Look, I don't even have anywhere to lay my head, he says. I don't have a home to go to. You're going to have to kind of give some of that stuff up if you want to follow me. This is what it's going to look like. If there's other things that you feel like you need to go and do first before making this commitment to me, then this isn't for you. Jesus says, it's covenant, serious commitment. This type of community, also as a Christ-centered community, seeing how he impacts, how he forms, about it being all about him and being like him, that means it's all about change as well. It's all about change. When Christ is involved in a community, when Christ forms a community, when the Son of God forms community, change happens. It has to. Change happens. People change. History changes. Jesus came to change history. Jesus came to make things right. Jesus came to change the future. Jesus came ultimately to change the world. And so a Christocentric community, a community that is shaped by the gospel, shaped by Jesus, centered on Jesus, it has to push towards change. It has to create change, change in people. Revelation 21 says this, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death shall be no more, neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. For the former things have passed away." And he who was seated on the throne, Jesus said, "Behold, I am making all things new." Change. This is what we look forward to. We're not there yet. But as a Christ-centered, Christocentric community, though, this is what we desire. This is what we join God in making things new, in making things right, in seeing these things happen. Jesus brings about change, and our community should bring about change. And I know that some of you, you've experienced this. You've experienced this change in our community here. You've experienced this change in your lives in small groups. Some of you encountered and experienced new life in Jesus for the first time here. And a lot of that had to do with the type of community that is fostered here, that is cultivated here. So we see that change happen. We hear stories of that change happening. And that's so awesome. And I want to say to us, let's keep going. Let's keep going for that. Let's make sure we don't forget that that's what it's about. That the type of community we're after with Christ at the center is meant, it's meant to cause change. So the gospel shapes our community and makes it Christocentric, Christ-centered. Not only that, but if we are a part of this kind of Christ-centered, Christocentric community together, then that also means that it is necessarily holistic. If you think about Christ and his life, the type of life that he led, the type of community that he created with his disciples and with others that followed him, the type of community he invited people into, it wasn't just, well, like, we're going to do kind of this over here, but then you can go do your own thing, and we'll do our own thing, and then maybe we'll come together over here and do this. No, it was an all-encompassing way of life. It wasn't just a part of life. It was a way of life. Holistic means you can't talk about any one individual part without talking about the whole. It means that everything is integrated. It means that whatever kind of compartments we like to put our parts of our life in are done away with. And this is actually kind of hard, especially in our culture. And so I don't have all the answers to this and what this is supposed to actually look like, how we're supposed to flesh this out in community together as a way of life. But that's the type of community that the gospel that Jesus forms. We can't hold anything back. You remember the story about the rich young ruler that came to Jesus and said, hey, how can I inherit eternal life? Jesus says, well, you got to keep all the commandments. And he said, I have? All right, I'm good. And Jesus says, oh, wait, one more thing though. You need to go and sell all your possessions, give it to the poor, and then come follow me. Come be a part of my community. And the rich young ruler was no longer excited about that because he had a lot of stuff, a lot of wealth. That was one part of his life that he wasn't willing to give up. He held that back. And so he went away with his head down, his depressed, sad because of his wealth. He wasn't willing to give it up. Jesus says, you got to give it up. It doesn't mean he's calling all of us to sell all of our stuff and give it to the poor. But this is what community with Jesus looks like. That's a glimpse of it. It's truly this idea of living life together. Living life together, not living aspects of life together or days of the week together. It's living life together. And this is, you know, the most familiar passage about community and about this, about kind of what this looks like, is Acts chapter 2. And I do want to take a look at that for a few minutes. So Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47. As you can tell already, this is not like a exegetical, like an expository sermon on one particular passage. So that's why I have them up on the screen. Acts chapter 2, 42 says this. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. We think about this passage and we just kind of say, oh, well, that's kind of a description of the early church. It's kind of like what we maybe aspire to in certain ways. But we don't recognize how amazing this is, actually. Like, what's going on here? This is, you know, again, it's a different time. It's a different cultural context. And so we can't make it necessarily a one-to-one comparison at all, but we also need to wrestle with it. And there are several things, several words or phrases in these verses that deal with this idea of holistic community that really, like, stick out to me. The first one is this. In verse 42, it says, they devoted themselves. This word devoted, when I looked up the meaning of the word devoted, I mean, you kind of have an idea of what devoted means, right? It means like committed to something. But as I looked up the word that kept coming up was this word constantly. Constantly. It said attending constantly, remaining constantly, attending to or attending upon constantly. That's what devoted means. It means constantly. And, you know, so Pastor Carl, one thing I appreciate about Pastor Carl, and many of you know him, he's at the Arlington location. One thing I appreciate about him is that he is devoted. He's devoted. And it's been interesting to hear him kind of describe at times, like, what he does. And one thing that he'll say, and I found it very interesting, but now it makes total sense. He will say that he's meeting with people from Arlington constantly. And he's praying for people constantly. And I'm like, well, is that really true? Like, you're doing that constantly? Well, you know what that means? Like, it means he's devoted. And that idea of constantly, it means like this is a way of life for him. It means that this is what he's giving his life to. And he's doing it constantly. And I love that. I want to do it more constantly. I've never described myself that way. But that's like, I like aspire to Pastor Carl's constantly. That's this idea, devoted. The next thing that stuck out to me was, it says that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship. This word fellowship has been like taken in many different directions, but traditionally in church, fellowship is like, we think of that's when we kind of getting together, right? We have a fellowship ministry here. We're going to have a Labor Day picnic in a few weeks, and it's a fellowship thing, right? We're going to get together and hang out and, you know, be in a relationship, but, you know, fellowship is, oh, you have a fellowship hall in your church or something. You know, that's where you have your potlucks and stuff like that. This is different. This is not devoting themselves to fellowship. This is devoting themselves to the fellowship. That word fellowship, the Greek word is koinonia. What it means is, it means partnership. It means mutuality. It means like close relationship. And not that, you know, fellowship events or fellowship halls or any other thing that traditionally church has used the word fellowship to describe doesn't mean that it's not part of that. But they devoted themselves to the fellowship, to the partnership, to the mutuality, the close relationship, and what it means to be there, right? It means to be devoted. It means constantly. The fellowship. The next word that really sticks out to me is, it says that they devoted themselves to the fellowship, the breaking of bread, the prayers. Awe came upon every soul. Many wonders and signs were, we could unpack this for a long time. Many wonders and signs were being done. All who believed were together. They were together. And that doesn't necessarily mean physically together, although here it certainly does mean that, right? Because they were devoted constantly to the fellowship. They were devoted to this holistic community. But what it also means is not just kind of physically being together. This idea of being together means one mind. They had one mind as they were in the fellowship, as they were devoted to the fellowship. They had one mind. They were together. They had all things in common. They were selling their possessions and belongings, distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. They, day by day, attended the temple together, and they broke bread in their homes. In their homes. That word home, the Greek word for that is oikos. Oikos, which means a couple of different things. It does mean like the physical place or the home or the place of the house. It means that. It doesn't just mean that, though. It also means family. It means family. So these people, these Christ-centered, this Christ-centered community that was devoted to the fellowship, that was together, they met in the home. But it wasn't just various families or various people coming to the house. They met in the house as a family. That's different. That's different than saying, hey, all these families are coming together. No, they met as a family. And you know what? That's very Christocentric. You know why? Because Jesus gives us a new understanding of family. And again, this is a hard one to swallow in some ways because, you know why? Because family in our culture has become an idol. So it's really hard for us to see outside of the priority, the idol that a lot of times family becomes. Everything else is kind of secondary to our immediate family. But Jesus actually says, no. That's not the case. Jesus in Mark chapter 3, he was with the crowds, with his disciples, and his mother and brothers came, his family came, they wanted to talk to him. So they said, hey, your family's out there. They want to talk to him. And Jesus says, Who's my family? Who are my mother and brothers? It's the people that are here that are devoted to the will of God. That's my family. Jesus gives us a new understanding of family. And it's a hard one to grasp, but these people got it, and they lived it out. They met together. They broke bread together in their homes as a family. I feel like there are people that are among us that are actually really good at this. I feel like the Thorntons are really good at this. Jonathan and Erica and others that are really good at this. This is kind of hard for some of us, though. I'm going to be honest here. This is a hard one for me. I'm an introvert, which I may not seem like an introvert, but I am. And Jenna's an introvert too. So for us, like, we have to be stretched. We have to really be stretched to say, hey, like, let's be more hospitable. Let's invite people over, right? I mean, if I were, this would be a very humbling thing. If I were to ask anybody to raise their hands who's been to our house, only a few of you would raise your hands, right? That's something that's a growth area for me. And I'm even the small group's pastor, right? So I'm not saying, I'm preaching to myself this morning. I have a lot of growth to happen in these areas. But they did that. They came together as a family with a new understanding of family in this holistic way of life community. The last word that really stuck out to me was, oh, no, there's one more. But the next one is the word all. See this a couple times. All who believed were together. They had all things in common. They had favor with all the people. All. When I went to a church growing up, and there were a couple of pastors there that disagreed on the word all. One of them said, all means all, and that's all me all means. All means all, and that's all means. And, you know, I look at that, and I mean, all, right here. All who believed were together. Not some. They didn't have just some things in common. They had all things in common. All means all, and that's all means. And maybe we, you know, don't necessarily think that that applies very literally in this case, but it might. I mean, we have to think about it. What does that word all mean? The last phrase is this phrase day by day, or some translations would say daily or every day. Day by day. It says day by day they attended the temple together. It says that the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Every day. Daily. Again, I don't have the answers to this, but we can't ignore it. If this is what was happening with a community that was Christ-centered, that was trying to be like him, that was holistic, living a way of life together, this is the kind of stuff that happened every day, day by day. And I know, you know, some of you, and this is where it's really hard to figure this out, because I know, you know, some of you come from like cultural contexts or even churches where like literally they do meet together every day. Right? They get together for like morning prayer meetings and different things like that, right? And I know that a lot of times that feels very legalistic. And so there's like some ways that needs to be like, you know, healed and almost kind of escaped from in some ways. And so maybe that's not right. I don't know. And if I were in that context, I would probably feel like that's pretty legalistic too. So I don't have the answer to this. All I know is that's what it says here about the people who had a Christ-centered, holistic community, is that day by day they were together. And day by day people were being saved. Can you imagine if day by day people were being saved, were experiencing new life in Jesus as a part of GCCC, as a part of our small groups, as a part of all the different expressions of our community here? That would be amazing. And that would only be God. But that's what happens in a Christ-centered, holistic community, day by day. We have to figure out, what does this look like for us? This holistic community, it's all-encompassing. I mean, it's the intimate things. It's the public things. It's celebrating. It's grieving. It's teaching. It's learning. It's serving. It's supporting. It's being sent. Jesus sent his disciples. He sent his community out. It's eating. It's praying. It's providing. It's evangelizing. It's confessing. It's everything. It's a way of life. It's beyond ourselves. A Christ-centered, holistic community means that this community also takes us beyond ourselves, outside of ourselves. Because you can't be a Christ-centered community and trying to be like him without thinking outside of yourself. That's what Christ did. That's who he was. He was beyond himself. Everything he did was for the purpose of outside of himself for others. It means that people are more important than possessions. It means that compassion is more important than consumption. It means that the cross is more important than comfort. This is the Jesus way. This is the way of Jesus. And you know what? That's why the people who we just read about, that community, the early church, they were called people of the way. And this is the way. This holistic, Christ-centered community. Well, thirdly, if this is a Christ-centered and if this is a holistic community, this all-encompassing way of life, then it also means that it's authentic. This type of community, it has to be that way. It's authentic. Jesus, Jesus called his disciples. They were not the best and the brightest. They were actually the B team. They were the ones who, in that society, had not made it up through the ranks of the Jewish school and gotten to the point where they were already a disciple of a rabbi. They went back to the family business. They didn't make it. So Jesus decided to call them. Normally, disciples would go to a rabbi and say, hey, can I be your disciple? And then they would test them to see if they're up to it. No, Jesus went to these B-team disciples, most likely teenagers, and said, hey, you guys, follow me. Follow me. And they did immediately. But they were the B-team. They were all kind of messy, right? Just think about them. Like, you have Peter. He just was, reckless, just mouthy, just doing all kinds of stuff, saying all kinds of stuff, reacting to things. I mean, we have Judas, who ultimately betrayed Jesus, right? I mean, so these were not the most spiritual, best and brightest. They certainly did not have it all together. So in this Christ-centered, holistic, authentic community, it means that Jesus, just as he didn't ask his original disciples to have it all together before they entered in community with him, he doesn't ask us, and we should not be asking each other to have it all together before we enter into community with each other. Jesus didn't do that. We shouldn't do that. It's not what Jesus expects. Jesus doesn't ask us to have it all together before devoting ourselves to this type of community. What it means, though, is that it means that we open up all of our lives in community because Jesus opened up all of his. Now, we can't point to the times where Jesus was saying the wrong thing or doing, but we do know that it was raw. I mean, he opened up all of his life. He got mad, he got sad, It means that we embrace the mess and not embrace our masks. Hold our masks on tighter. It means that we bring our real selves in real relationship. Remember the passage from, Luke chapter 9, where Jesus says, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. That doesn't just mean that it was going to be kind of uncomfortable and, his needs had to be kind of taken care of from outside. He didn't have a home to go. You know what else it means? What I see in this is it also means that Jesus is saying, hey, if you're going to follow me, if you're going to be in community with me, that means that you're not just going to be in community with me some of the time and then you're going to go back to your home where you can be yourself, where you can let your hair down, where you can let off steam or whatever. He says, no, if you're going to be in community with me, that means we're going to see everything. I'm going to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. There isn't some escape that you're going to be able to go to kind of do your own thing, to be yourself, to let your hair down or whatever that means. No, we open up all of our lives. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And for a lot of us, it's more the bad and the ugly than the good, right? We're broken. Remember that idea of family, a new understanding of family. Well, like, think about your own family, like your immediate family. Is your family perfect? No. Right? It's very messy, right? For most of us. If it's not, well, man, like, please tell us how you did that. Our families are not perfect, right? They're messy. And that is a glimpse. If we have a new understanding of family, that means that just as we know, we accept, we embrace, we do all of that with our immediate family, that means we do that with our new family as well, our community. I love the fact that even as Jesus invited these disciples and with all of their mess, right, we get to see the beauty of how all that unfolded. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly. We see Peter's recklessness, but we also see Peter's restoration. We get to see all of that unfold. And if we're a Christ-centered and holistic community, then that's what that means. It means that it's going to be authentic. It means that we're going to have to bring our real selves and into a real relationship. Sometimes that's hard, though. We kind of feel like we need to have certain things together, or we can kind of open up this much but not go too far. We can maybe be a little bit vulnerable here but not too far. No, we bring it all. We bring it all. So this community, descriptors of this type of community, Christocentric, Christ-centered, holistic, a way of life, all-encompassing, and because of that, it's authentic. That's the way of Jesus. That's the type of community that the gospel forms, that the gospel creates, that the gospel cultivates, and that's the type of community that we need to have here. And before we close, and I want us to reflect and pray a little bit and ask you a couple questions, but I've asked Chris Lau, who's one of our small group leaders, I've asked him to just come up and share just for a few moments of what this type of community has looked like for him, both as a participant and how that's impacted him, and now as a leader, as he's been able to see small group impact other people. So Chris, come up and share it with us for a few moments.
Can you hear me? All right, great. Well, it's a very exciting time now, right? For those of us who have kids, if you're a teacher, or if you're students, the summer is over, and you know, you're shopping for school supplies. You are, you know, for us, we were looking for Caleb's new backpack, new shoes. You know, we're checking out, you know, school. School is actually having a, you know, open house this coming week. We're going back. We're trying to find out, you know, who the teacher is. You know, and Caleb is super excited, wondering if his best friend is going to be in the class, wondering who his teacher is going to be. You know, I feel the same vibe here, right, around this time of the year here at GCCC. The small group season is coming back. And we are excited. We are wondering who our, you know, small group members are going to be, who the leaders is going to be, is our best friend going to be in the small group, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, very excited, very exciting time for us. And, you know, definitely for our family, for the past 5 years that we are here in GCCC, the small group had impacted us tremendously. It had blessed us as a family. And we are truly fortunate, we feel, to be in this church and to be in a small group that we were in. So as Pastor Tracy asked me to share, you know, I've been thinking about this, you know, what does a small group mean to